Hello and welcome to Lab I-68 Podcast. This podcast is for women of faith who want to get their restless behinds out of the pews and into the battlefield for the kingdom of God. We're here to equip and encourage you to put your faith into action in every area of your life and to really claim the name of Kingdom Builder. My name is Leah Rempel, and I am joining you in this very messy middle of a surrendered faith. Today, my guest is a first-time author of the incredible book, Fight for Love, which you have the opportunity to win this week. She is also a podcast host of Fight for Love and is the founder of Fight for Love Ministries, which, quote, empowers women with both the facts and the faith to fight against porn addiction and its effects on them, their spouses, and their families, end quote. Rosie McKinney is joining me today to discuss porn and porn addiction, the church's role in combating pornography, and the importance of fellowship with others who are affected by pornography. And truth be told, I have actually met Rosie. She came to the One Conference here in Edmonton in January, and I was on the presenter care team as a volunteer. And because she was in a separate hotel from the rest of the speakers, I actually trekked up to see her to give her a welcome package. And we ended up having such a lovely conversation. She really is the real deal. So kind and just as wonderful as you imagine her being. I was so thrilled that she was willing to come onto the show, especially in its debuting week, which is super cool. Today's topic is a little bit of a tough one. In fact, if you have little ones around, you may want to listen to this on your own first. Some of the subject matter might be a little bit more sensitive, as we are going to be talking about a little bit about the birds and the bees and pornography. So I would encourage you to maybe listen to this one a little bit on your own first. The statistics and the stories you're going to hear in this episode are going to both encourage you and potentially shock you. From the age of a child's first porn exposure being in the single digits and the impact porn has on the brain, to the hope for all who struggle with porn addiction or who are in a relationship affected by porn addiction, you are going to leave this episode feeling both armed and deeply encouraged by Rosie and her graceful approach to a very, very difficult discussion. I really hope that you enjoy the show. Rosie, thank you so much for being here on Lab I-68. We're just so honored to have somebody with your expertise on here with us. I would just love if you could introduce us a little bit to who you are and what your roles are in your life right now. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Leah. I'm excited about our conversation. So I am married to Mark, and we have two, I was going to say little boys, but they're not little anymore. They're like 8 and 10 now. And I am the founder of a ministry called Fight for Love Ministries. And we are a community of women who equip and educate women with the faith and the facts to take their marriages back from pornography. So we have a panel discussion podcast, and I've just released a book, and we have an online support group, and we just go out and we talk, and we just try and kickstart this discussion in a church that doesn't really want to talk about it very much.
Yes. Okay. That's so good. I would love if you could tell us just a little bit of how you got yourself into this ministry, why it's become kind of a passion of yours to help these marriages and families out with pornography addiction.
So this was my story. In fact, I've actually been on this merry-go-round, this particular merry-go-round, twice now.
Okay.
Because prior to getting married, prior to becoming a Christian, I had already had a long-term relationship with an unrepentant porn addict. And I had learned what I needed to know about someone with a porn addiction the hard way. So yeah. I had wasted years trying to pretend it away, trying to plead it away, trying to compete with it, and nothing worked. He remained unrepentant, and eventually that all fell apart. So then fast forward, I become a Christian, and I meet my husband, and he tells me that he has got a struggle with pornography. But in my mind, I'm seeing that as a win, because I've already been with somebody who didn't see it as a struggle, didn't see it as a problem, refused to do anything about it. So I'm thinking, hey, I've got somebody here who knows it's a problem, doesn't want it, is willing to work hard on this. This isn't going to be an issue.
Yeah.
This is something we can overcome. This is going to be fine. Little did I know that actually very soon after getting married, this all fell apart. This all imploded very dramatically and very devastatingly. And so when we got into recovery, the only reason that we got into recovery is because I put my foot down right then at that point and said, I can't do this again. I've seen how this goes. You need to get help. because you can't have me and pornography. We can't do both of those. It doesn't work. I've already done this. So fortunately, he was ready to get into recovery, and we did. And why I've created this ministry is that back then, when I was going through this, I felt so alone, so very, very alone, so very shamed and confused, and didn't feel I could tell anybody. The thing that changed for me was actually finding people in recovery. We went to a sex and love addicts retreat one New Year's Eve.
Oh,
I know. It was terribly romantic. No. Yeah. So that was sort of my first introduction to recovery. My husband had gone off to recovery and was in groups and things, but there was nothing for me. Even though I was seeing the same therapist as he was, there was nothing really in terms of community for me. But at that retreat, I discovered just how transformative and healing it was to be in a room full of other truly authentically broken people.
Yeah.
Well, not authentically broken, but authentic about being broken, should I say.
Yeah.
And that just changed everything for me. And it was like something switched inside me. And I realized that in order to heal, in order to get over this, I needed to create community.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did. We came back home and I sent my husband to his support groups with little notes saying, hey, if you're the wife or a partner of a porn or sex addict, I would love to get together and just chat and be with somebody who knows what it feels like. And so we started with a little group of four that went to a group of 16. It just sort of grew and snowballed from then. And ever since then, it has just been my passion to get out there and talk in front of women and say, here are the things you need to know about porn addiction. Here are the things you need to understand. Here are the lies that you may have been believing.
Yeah.
And it's time to come out of the shadows. So that was a very long answer to a short question.
No, that's perfect. Thank you so much for sharing that. I mean, there must have been such a thirst then for these women to want to be together. You know, it's just maybe somebody taking that first step into inviting other women into that community. So I can't imagine like just the relief that it would have provided for these people.
That first group of 16 was an amazing time because none of us had experienced anything like that before. Yeah. None of us had ever shared what was truly going on in our marriage before. None of us had ever been prayed for it. None of us had dealt with the trauma. I really wish everyone could experience that level of fellowship, that true walking in the light where you do absolutely reveal who you are and what is going on. And so do they.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the shame just evaporates instantly. You don't have to work at it. It just evaporates and there is freedom and there's joy and there's lightness and there's laughter, even amongst the tears. That's what fellowship is supposed to be like. That is what the church is supposed to look like. But we're so caught up in managing our images and our reputations that it doesn't happen in the church. And I think that's it's such a shame.
Absolutely. I'd love to talk about the church actually a little bit and porn addiction and also our conversations around sex in the church. I mean, this is an assumption and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like because we've kind of tabooed that topic, that maybe that's kind of led to some of the problems with porn addiction or just entry into porn even is because we don't really know where to go to talk about sex.
Absolutely. And I think what has happened at the moment is that women who struggle are completely isolated and shamed. And the church is compounding the problem because we refuse to talk about the fact that women are looking at pornography. Because I know that when I go out and talk about this issue, the question that I have when people come up to me is not, how can we help these women? It's, why do they do it? Mm-hmm. Why are they looking at that? Implying that there's something deeply wrong with a woman if she chooses to do that. That is so far from the truth because women and girls are just as vulnerable and susceptible to being caught up in porn addiction as guys and boys. The research is in now. They have plugged our brains into these machines and shown us pornography and our brains light up in exactly the same way. There is no difference. And if there's one thing that we could get out of this conversation is churches, you have to talk to your girls. You have to talk to your women and you have to make this a normal conversation.
Yeah. Absolutely. I want to read something actually that you wrote. Let's be clear. If women wanted romance, they would be firing up Netflix, not porn sites. Whether it comes to soft forms of porn or the typical internet pornography that's out there, women are using it in the same way and for exactly the same reasons as men. That surprised me, to be honest, just because like you talked about in the book, women are so much more emotional. We want emotional connection, but that statement did surprise me. So could you just expand on that a little bit?
Yeah. And I'm not surprised that it is surprising. Mm-hmm. But actually, when you get into the science, it becomes even more fascinating. The research that they've done has proven that while you are being aroused, you cannot feel fear or anxiety. So if you're looking at something that disgusts you, those normal feelings of like, I shouldn't be looking at this. This is just weird. This is unhealthy. This is disgusting. Yeah. This is harmful, are being overridden by the fact that you're aroused by this material. And that's just a biological response. That's no judgment on what you're being aroused to. This is why kids get pulled into this so young, because their bodies are responding to this. Mm-hmm. And the other interesting thing about females who are addicted to pornography is that the way that we interact with pornography is that we project ourselves into the action. Mm. So whereas men objectify what they're watching, women actually project themselves into the action. And if you consider what is being done in porn, you know, the abuse and the degradation and the humiliation, this is really damaging to women and girls who watch this material because they are becoming aroused and conditioning their brains to being abused.
Yeah.
And that does carry over into relationships. You know, even when they don't want it to, there are ramifications. And this is why it's so important that they are able to reach out and get the healing that they need. And that's only going to happen if we start making this a conversation in the church.
Absolutely. I want to go even further into that a little bit with the church's role, because, you know, we've already talked on a little bit that women aren't being addressed in this issue, but there's also just a lack of safe spaces for us to talk about this. And if we want to have, you know, the right biblical worldview on it, we need to be able to find those resources at the church, or at least part of the greater church. So what do you think churches need to do to have these conversations?
That is a great question. If we really want to make a difference, we have to talk to the women. We have to talk to those people who are being affected by pornography addiction, not the ones who are just doing it. When we look at all the addicts, all the people who are addicted in the church, the majority are guys. The number of women are growing, but the majority are guys. I mean, you know, 79% of Christian men who attend evangelical church regularly use porn. Mm-hmm. 55% of married guys use porn. These are huge numbers. But the way that we reach them, the way that we start taking back ground on this, is we need to talk to the wives. We need to talk to the girlfriends. We need to talk to the fiancés and say, you are being affected. You know you're being affected. Mm-hmm. You know, just validate their instincts. This is traumatizing to you, and this is negatively impacting your relationship. So validate what is going on and acknowledge that this isn't just every man's battle. This is affecting everybody.
Yeah.
You know, when two become one, everybody is affected. It doesn't matter who's driving the car when it crashes. You're all in the vehicle. Everybody is affected. So not only do we need to validate that wives are impacted, we need to educate them that they have a pivotal role to play in getting their guy into recovery. Because here's the thing that I never realized at the beginning, and my husband, who's now a CSAP, and he's worked with hundreds of couples who are struggling with pornography. Here's the thing that we realized. The majority of married men who arrive in his office arrive with the footprint of their wife on the back.
Wow.
It's the wives who actually force this issue. But they don't force this issue until they're on the brink of divorce normally, because it takes so much for a wife to come forward and bring this issue into the light. Sometimes it's because they're trying to be respectful. And if this is your problem, you need to go forward and deal with it. I'm not going to impinge on your area. This is your problem. You deal with it. Mm-hmm. It might be because they're feeling ashamed because they're falsely assuming that this is something to do with them. Mm-hmm. So they're kept sort of hidden and shamed in the shadows. But quite often, the messages that we're given as wives of porn addicts in the church are, well, firstly, there's the old chestnut, just have more sex with him. That'll cure it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we could dive into the neuroscience later, if you like, that says that's complete nonsense.
Yes, please. Yeah.
But also, if they're a good enough wife, somehow this issue would disappear. So if they're loving enough, if they're forgiving enough, if they're graceful enough, they can somehow love him out of this. And it's so common. Women try for years to be the perfect wife, thinking that somehow that will stop him looking at pornography. But this is based on the fundamental misunderstanding that pornography addiction is an addiction just like any other.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a process addiction. And by that, I mean, you don't inject it or ingest it or smoke it. You become addicted to the chemicals that are produced in your brain when you do the activity, just like gambling. Mm-hmm. So if you were dealing with an alcoholic or a drug addict, and this is your partner, you wouldn't think, oh, I know, I can cure this by becoming the bottle of vodka or becoming the cocaine. You just wouldn't. It would be like, no, that's just silly. But somehow with pornography addiction, the wives think, oh, if I can become his pornography, then he won't need to look at other people. And somehow that's better, even though on a gut level, they're going, nope, he's still objectifying me. He's still not being relational with me. This is about him avoiding intimacy, not actually promoting and enhancing our intimacy.
Yeah.
So if we really do want to tackle this, you need to tell the wives that not only are they being effective, but that they are highly effective in getting their guys into recovery. They have this crucial role to play. And I truly do believe that instead of having men's meetings, men's events on pornography, we either open this up to everybody, or you want to be even more effective, you have women's only meetings where you just talk about this topic and you say, here are the facts, ladies. This is what pornography is doing to their brains. This is how it's affecting how he's seeing you. This is affecting how he's viewing everything else in his life. This is the trajectory if this continues without intervention. Yeah. And it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse because porn addiction escalates and it is progressive.
Yeah.
And the only way that he's going to come forward is if you draw a firm line in the sand. Yeah. And it's not because he doesn't want to. It's not because, you know, there's some tremendous moral failing. It's not because he doesn't love you. It's because his brain has been hijacked by this highly addictive substance.
Yeah.
Basically, he's drowning and he needs somebody to throw him a lifesaver. And quite often, as the wife, you're the only one. You're the only one who knows that he's drowning in this stuff, because you can't tell a porn addict by looking at them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the wife who is being effective, but she doesn't realize that she can be so effective. And so my whole mission is to speed up the process of wives taking action. So instead of crisis management, you are doing early intervention. And the sooner you can, the better, because not only will there be less damage to your heart, less damage to his brain, your journey back to wholeness, beyond transformation even, will be so much shorter and less expensive. You know, you're going to save yourself a lot of money in counseling if you tackle this earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, thank you for that response. I just love that. I really feel like I want to see the church really stepping up and providing a safe spaces for this conversation to happen. It's just so important. But let's say that we have somebody in our lives, they're not keeping it all to themselves anymore. They have shared a little bit, not openly, but maybe they've disclosed it to us that they are either addicted themselves or porn addiction is affecting their relationships in some way. So how would I, as a friend, be able to come alongside and be able to support them, to be able to encourage them in that season of facing that porn addiction head on?
I do love that question. And I do wish more people had your heart, because it would just make life so much easier if you had a friend who actually knew the facts about porn addiction, who actually understood that this is not your fault, that you are not to blame, and that there is no shame, and that this is what's going on in his head, and that she does need to get help, and to encourage her and to validate, this must be really hard for you. You must have been really confused. You must have been hurting. I'm so proud of you for coming forward and asking me for help. I mean, it's an honor. If somebody comes to you with this issue, it is such an honor. It means that they really, really trust you, because unfortunately, many of us have had a lot of bad advice.
Yeah.
By well-meaning friends and family, because, you know, there's so much misinformation out there about it being healthy and empowering and, you know, beneficial to relationships, that we don't know the facts. We don't know the truth. We are smoking in the 50s. We just don't get it yet. We just don't get it. So I think if you can educate yourself with the facts, you'll be able to give her really good advice and encourage her into fellowship, where she's going to get the support that she needs. And by that, she needs to be with other women who are going through this.
Totally.
You really do, because you need to look in their faces and go, hey, you're beautiful. You're smart. You're intelligent. Mm-hmm. You're funny. Why is your husband doing this? You know, because it's difficult to do that in a mirror.
Yeah.
To actually value yourself. But when you go in a room full of women and you go, these are really attractive, funny, smart, kind, compassionate women. What is going on? And you realize that it's nothing to do with you. And that's why it's so important that we do find fellowship of other women going through this. So the best thing you can do to prepare yourself or equip yourself to deal with friends or people that you minister to with this issue is become as educated as possible. And the easiest and a quick way to do that is go to Fight the New Drug.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they have that beautiful 3-part short documentary series. And basically, you can equip yourself in an hour and a half, everything you need to know. And it's really uplifting. And it makes you want to go out and talk about this issue and, you know, just spread the message of hope and truth that this isn't the end of the story. This is only the beginning of a fantastic new story.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I want to touch on a few other groups of people who could be affected, two of them being the singles and engaged, or they're not quite married yet, but already porn has started to affect their intimacy or their relationship or even their ideas of sex. You know, if they've saved themselves for marriage, maybe it's affected their ideas of sex before that, and maybe they haven't, and it's already affected their ideas of sex. What would you say to those people who aren't quite into a marriage where there's a commitment, there's a hard commitment? What would you say to those people who are single or engaged and are already having to deal with this?
I would say, hooray that you've caught this mm-hmm. early. Mm-hmm. And I am so hopeful and excited that you can tackle this before walking down the aisle. I've worked with a number of women who have done this hard step before getting married. And it's beautiful. They walk down the aisle with a sober mm-hmm. fiance. And that is the best gift that you can give everyone. I mean, it does kind of take the shine off the Cinderella story in the fact that you need to do this hard recovery process, but there's no way around it. You would be dealing with this before or after. And I highly suggest that you deal with it before, because there is tremendous hope if you are with a guy who is willing to do whatever it takes.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you've got a guy who is willing to do whatever it takes, he can get sober. They can all get sober. Mm-hmm. But you need to know that. You need to know whether he's willing to do that. And so it's good that you find out ahead of time.
Yeah, definitely. And I hear that even in your own story of being in a relationship with someone who was unwilling to change and someone who was willing to change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it doesn't remove all the pain.
Yeah.
But it's a great foundation. Mm-hmm. It's a great foundation. You will go into marriage with eyes wide open and you will fully know the person that you're going to marry. And they will fully know you, because it's a two-way process, because it's not just the addict has to walk 100% in the light about what he's done. And I'm using a guy here, but it doesn't have to be a guy. Mm-hmm. He will be utterly transparent with what he's done with you and if any other acting out occurs. But you will also be authentic with him and honest about the way it's affecting you. Mm-hmm. You know, you will have to put those firm boundaries in place. And learning how to set firm boundaries is a brilliant skill for all of us.
Absolutely.
So, you know, this is all good stuff. But I would just encourage people to do that difficult thing of, let's rip the can off this lid. Let's have a look. The can off this lid? That's not right, is it? That's really not right. The lid off this can. Mm-hmm. And take a look at what we're actually dealing with.
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to, you know, an engaged couple or a married couple, and one of them is struggling and the other one wants to, you know, support them and get them out of this addiction, what are some of the barriers that they might face that might be prohibitive to their recovery?
The biggest barrier is an unwillingness to walk 100% in the light. Mm. Because recovery is really very simple. It's not easy.
Yeah.
But it is very straightforward. You just have to tell the truth. You have to tell the absolute truth, past, present, going forward, not just to God in the privacy of your prayer closet, but to other people, mm-hmm. not just your spouse or your fiance. Mm-hmm. And it is important that you are 100% honest with them, but you need to tell other people. And the reason that this is important is because this is how you create intimacy with other people. And intimacy is actually the problem. Pornography is not actually the problem at all. Pornography is the solution to a much deeper problem, which is an intimacy disorder. It's a way of feeling disconnected with other people. You've been using pornography to medicate those uncomfortable feelings that come when you're not actually connected or authentic or sharing who you are. Mm. So you can't just take the porn out and expect everything to suddenly be healed because it's been serving a very important purpose. It has been helping you cope with everything that's uncomfortable.
Right.
So the way that you get rid of it is that you replace it with intimacy, and that has to be developed with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is entirely scriptural. It's entirely biblical. 1 John 1:7, walk in the light as he is in the light, and then you have fellowship with one another. And the blood of his son will cleanse you from your sin.
Yeah.
If you walk in the light, then you have fellowship. You don't have fellowship if you're not walking in the light. This is why this whole process, this whole recovery process is a gift. It's a really strange gift. But when you enter this into this process, it transforms your life because it transforms all your relationships, because you're suddenly able to be yourself.
Yeah.
Because you're free to be yourself, because you know that you are loved and known as yourself. You don't have to hide anymore. And you don't have to be scared of saying what's really going on for you. And so your question was, you know, what are the barriers that stop people becoming fully sober and becoming free? Is that you have to be willing to go there. And that's scary.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's certainly hard in the position that you're saying, in that situation at the beginning, because in some ways it's easier when you're on the brink of a divorce or you're about to lose your job and right. your family and everything else, because you're kind of forced to it. There is nowhere to wiggle. It's yeah. like,
Some large consequences.
There's large consequences, and that you've hit bottom.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is that, can you do this without hitting bottom? And I'm like, yes, you absolutely can, but you have to understand what the goal is.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a difference between sort of running towards heaven and backing out of hell. Mm-hmm. So when you do it, you know, crisis management, you are literally backing out of hell. I will do whatever I need to, because my life has fallen apart and I don't know how to put it back together. And someone else is telling me this will work. I'm prepared to do it. But if you do it in those early days, you need to understand why you're doing it. And that will give you the motivation to push through the difficult stuff of becoming 100% honest about yourself, because that's not easy. It's really not easy. I struggle with that daily, you know. And the thing about recovery is, once you get rid of the first layer, the porn addiction, you realize there's anger underneath, or right. there's something else underneath, and it just keeps on coming. Mm-hmm. You know, sanctification is a beautiful thing.
Yes, absolutely.
But in all seriousness, it is a beautiful thing, but it's not a pain-free thing. It hurts. But if you really do want marriage designed by God, you have to be authentic and vulnerable and metaphorically naked with that person in all aspects of your life.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I love what you said about it kind of being almost a replacement for intimacy. Could you just expand maybe a little bit more on that point?
Yeah, well, it's a coping mechanism that most people develop very early on, because, you know, tragically, most people get into this when they're young. You know, before they're even really aware of what sex is, they've stumbled upon an image, their bodies have responded to it, and those deep neural pathways are paved associating porn and pleasure so strongly that nothing else really competes. And this is why whenever, you know, whenever they're feeling a strong emotion, whether it's fear or anger or even joy, those pathways automatically direct them. Ah, porn, there's the answer. That's how we celebrate. That's how we medicate. That's the answer in all ways. And not only does your brain respond to feelings, but it also becomes hypersensitive to pornographic cues. So if you've developed a bit of a habit in a room or a time of day or a place, just being in that room or that time or that place of day can actually trigger you.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is incredible bondage that needs deliberate and careful, structured help to get out of it, because you can't do it in your own strength. This is too cunning and baffling. They call it cunning and baffling. It is, you know, if you think, well, I'm just going to logically work my way out of this, you can't do it. Your brain has literally been hijacked and you need someone else to act as a prefrontal cortex.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a condition called hypofrontality that you get in two ways. One of it is a car crash and the other is heavy porn use. Basically, that's an impairment of the prefrontal cortex. And that's the part of the brain that makes logical, thoughtful, rational decisions.
Wow.
You are literally not thinking straight. And that, to come back to my very first point, the reason why wives and girlfriends need to stand up and say enough, say, we are seeking help. And if you can't do it, I'm going to do it. The reason that they need to do that is because the guy's brain is not working properly. You can't expect a drowning man to be able to lift his arms out and wave for help. He can't do it. as the years go on, I become, and the more couples that we work with, I become more and more convinced that that is the key. That is the key to turning this battle around. When people understand that appealing to addicts and saying, if we just break the shame enough, they'll come forward. It's like, no, they're in bondage, you know?
Physiologically, that just doesn't work like that.
It doesn't work. They need somebody else. If you've got a drug addict, it's very unusual that a drug addict suddenly goes, do you know what? I'm just feeling convicted. You know, it's either, doesn't happen. They're either, you know, their life has absolutely fallen apart and they've got no choice, or somebody intervenes.
Right.
And it's the same with pornography addiction.
Wow. That is so powerful. Thank you so much for sharing that. I wouldn't have even put that together with you're saying comparing like the car crash to porn usage and addiction. That is insane.
It is. And don't you just find it like shocking that we don't know this stuff? Yeah. It almost seems unreal. Like, oh, she's making that up. That can't possibly be true. But I would say go on yourbrainonporn.com and look at all the neurological studies, look at all the psychological, the sociological studies, read the research. Because even I sometimes go, this can't be real, because why isn't everybody talking about it? And so then I go back on the scientific websites and go, no, it is real. It is real. Yeah, I don't know why people aren't talking about it, but they're not. Yeah. Because you do have to do that paradigm shift. Just like with anything else, just like, you know, I know you've got a very strong interest in stopping human trafficking. Do you find this where you go, that can't possibly be happening, because otherwise everybody would be talking about it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So just a little background, I do something called Dresember. I don't know if you've heard of Dresember before, but I've done it for 3 years now. And it was the first kind of advocacy that I had ever really done. And just going down that road of learning more and more about human trafficking, just over and over again, it's unbelievable how much I didn't know, how much people around me don't know or don't realize, and how much it affects our local communities. And it feels like the same is exactly what you're saying, is why don't people know this stuff? What do you think are some of the barriers or the reasons that we don't know about these things, especially in the church?
I think because we're part of the problem.
Mm.
Because we are creating the demand and they are providing the supply.
Right.
And although we might not be going out and actually, you know, hiring a prostitute, we are contributing to the pornography industry, which is inextricably linked to human trafficking.
Yeah.
You know, pornography, human trafficking, and prostitution, they are all linked. They are inseparable. Mm-hmm. And so because we've got 80% of guys at church watching pornography, there's a good reason why we're not talking about the people that we're watching. Because here's the deal. You cannot guarantee that what you're watching is consensual at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's coming out a lot in the press lately that there's a lot of underage, non-consensual stuff out there.
Yeah.
And these companies are profiting from it, and we're not doing anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I think the fact that we're part of the demand.
Yeah.
But that's also why I want to talk to women. It's like, as Christians, we have to stand up for those who are being exploited. And there are more people being human trafficked than were ever involved in the original slave trade.
Yeah.
You know, we've got more people involved in that today, which is outrageous. Why aren't we campaigning on that?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Wow. There's one last group that I would really like to touch on before we wrap up our conversation. And that would just be parents and a lot of children that are viewing pornography for the first time. And I could be wrong. Is it something like age 11, or is that even too high?
There are studies that say it's as young as 8, sort of between 8 and 11. They're sort of the studies that have come out, the average age of first exposure. I know. I've got 2 boys and it's mind-blowing.
Yeah. How do we talk to our kids about that, you know, as they're coming up to that age? Because I think we kind of want to say like, well, not my kid, you know, but it's not always that they're seeing it at home for the first time either.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
A lot of times at school. I mean, I was a school teacher. I know what happened at school. And so, what would you say to parents? Like, how should we be talking to our kids about this stuff?
Yeah, I'd say there's bad news and good news. The bad news is they're going to see it.
Yeah.
But the good news is there are terrific resources out there, free resources, that all the hard work's been done for you. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to struggle to, how do I talk to my kids about this? I can give you some links, and if you want to pop them in your show notes.
Yeah.
Because I might not get all the organizations right off the top of my head, but you've got some terrific picture books for your little ones that make it really simple. You can explain the concept of pornography to little ones that have no concept of what sex is.
Yeah.
You know, these are good pictures, these are bad pictures. And if you see the bad pictures, this is what you do. And so it's not scary. But if you can get a head start on this, if you can actually start talking about this topic before they're exposed, you are giving them such a gift because they're not going to be blindsided.
Right.
And because what you want to encourage is them coming to you. You want to encourage these open channels of communication. Mm-hmm. So we've got picture books. We've got Fight the New Drug for sort of your tweenagers and your teenagers, which have got brilliant videos and testimonies. And they're not heavy and they're not scary, but they are really informative. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of in terms of creating an internal filter, because you do need to prepare them for what they're going to be exposed to. And then you can do the external things like, you know, your filtering and accountability and blocking software. And there are even websites out there where you put in your requirements, like you might put in your kids' ages and what you want to do. Like you might want to do, you know, limiting the amount of screen time or blocking content or accountability. So you put in your requirements and then they spit out their recommendations, which is brilliant because it is bewildering, the choices out there. Oh, there's even Culture Reframed, which is a UK organization, but that's like a training course for parents.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is terrific. So do not fear. It is perfectly doable. Mm-hmm. But I do want to validate that it is scary.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm trying not to think about it too much. My son's only three, but it definitely has crossed my mind that that is something that, especially as a mom of a boy, mm-hmm. that is something that I would have to kind of be able to talk to him at a younger age for sure.
And the girls though.
Absolutely.
Even more because who are the girls going to talk to? Who are they going to tell?
Yeah.
They're not. So it's really, really, really important that we educate our girls as well.
Oh, I'm so glad that you said that. That's awesome. So I am curious, now that you have been on this journey for a long time, you've been helping people that are in porn-affected relationships. How has that changed your relationship with Christ? How have you seen Jesus working through your ministry?
Oh, that's a great question. I think I get grace now because coming into this, it was like, my husband's got the problem and he needs to sort out his problem. And then you start unpacking it all and go, oh, do you know what? I'm just as much a sinner. I have got just as many issues that need healing. And then you start to heal them. And then you realize that actually there are some things that you're never going to heal. You know, you need a savior. Yeah. You don't just need a savior one time. You need a savior on an ongoing basis. And as much as we want to not need a savior.
Yeah.
And not keep messing up and not keep hurting people and not keep being hurt. It's just not going to happen this side of heaven. So I just think I get grace on a much bigger level because I realize how much more I need it. And that I see this happen again and again and again in other people. And there is such joy and freedom and gratitude when you get grace. You know, you can't sing Amazing Grace and not burst into tears.
Yeah.
You know, if you really get why you needed savior and just how much a wretch you were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. That's so beautiful. Okay, I'm going to wrap up with just a few questions that we're going to be asking all of our guests that come on here. And one of them is, what is one resource that has really inspired your work?
I have one for you that I think you're going to like, and you might actually know about this. This is a ministry called Exodus Cry.
Oh, yeah. I have heard of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. In terms of the work that they do, unpacking and unraveling sexual exploitation in all its forms. And they have an amazing podcast, and also they produce documentaries, and they're the ones who are behind all these petitions at the moment that you see against Pornhub and against the companies that financially benefit from the porn industry, the credit card companies and things. They're the ones who are really on the forefront. So Exodus Cry, check them out.
Oh, wonderful. Definitely will. We'll put that in the show notes for sure. The next question would just be, what is one spiritual rhythm or discipline that has been really life-giving for you? Maybe even more so in the midst of all of this nonsense of COVID-19 that we're going through.
I have something that I've started when we started our online support group. And that is every time a new woman joins our group, I plant a seed for her.
Oh.
And I do it on a Friday. Some people are radishes.
We won't tell them who's who.
No, exactly. The beetroots are not doing well, I tell you. But every day I go in there and I water them and I pray for them. And it's just a little reminder. It just reminds me that from nothing, from absolutely nothing. You can't see anything and you just keep watering, that then you get this little tiny fragile sprout that then becomes bigger and bigger. And then you put it in the garden and it's just blooming. And it's nothing I did. That's why I love gardening, because it just reminds me of just how he creates something out of absolute nothing. And that all we have to do is literally just show up and pray.
Yeah. That is so beautiful and so creative. I love that so much. That's amazing. Okay. As we wrap up, Rosie, I just want to say to everybody, please get her book, Fight for Love. And we're just curious, where else can we find you on the internet and where else can we connect with you and your work?
Our ministry website is fightforloveministries.org. And our podcast is Fight for Love. And we're on Instagram at, I think we're Fight for Love Ministries. And we're on Facebook as well. And our online support group is on Facebook as well. But if you go to the website, fightforloveministries.org, there's links to everything. And there's also a devotional, which is on YouVersion, which some people have found really helpful.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay. One more thing I want to touch on, and that is the idea of your podcast. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Because I've listened to a few episodes and it's just such, it's such a beautiful idea. Can you share a little bit about your podcast?
I would love to. Yeah. This was something that I wanted to do to give people a glimpse of what fellowship sounds like. Mm-hmm. You know, it's scary walking into your first support group. It's really, really scary. So I wanted to give people like a sneak peek to be able to hear what goes on and be able to just taste the authenticness and the friendship and the warmth and the love and the humor and the vulnerability. Mm-hmm. So each week we take a question, a common question like, will I ever trust him again? Or is it my fault? Or why do we need a period of celibacy? All these questions that you want answers to. And what I like about it is we're not experts. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not therapists. We're not neuroscientists. We're just wives who have fought really hard to get porn out of our marriages and been successful. And we had to learn things, lots of things, the hard way. But we thought if we tell you what we did wrong or what we would have done if we'd had our time again, then maybe we can speed up that process and just encourage people to reach out and find their own support group.
Yeah. Oh, that's so awesome. Thank you so much, Rosie, for being here. I just so appreciate the time and your expertise. I have so much respect for the work that you're doing, and I really am praying that this episode would just speak to women in a really powerful way. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leah. This has been such fun. Thank you.
Oh my goodness, you guys, wasn't that so good? Rosie is just the sweetest, and her practice of planting a seed for every new member of their recovery community honestly nearly brought me to tears. I hope that as you leave this episode, you do not leave discouraged or overwhelmed, but rather you are more open to having these sorts of discussions. They are so important. And the more normalized they are, the more people will feel loved to come forward and enter a really supportive community, the types of communities that Rosie hosts herself. Every week, we really want to see that you are putting your faith into action, and we're going to be hosting a Lab I-68 challenge using the hashtag LabI68 challenge. This week, we are going to challenge you to have one conversation about this very topic of pornography. And I guarantee it's going to be a little scary, maybe a little awkward, but trust me, these are necessary conversations because you just never know who is going to need to be encouraged. So if you do the challenge, use the hashtag on social media. You can even maybe talk about pornography on your social media. I know that'd be a little scary. So throw the hashtag in there. We really want to be able to connect to you and know who's listening to the podcast. Please join us on those challenges as the weeks go on, because we're going to be doing every single week for every episode. If you have a moment, please subscribe, leave a review, rate the show, hopefully with 5 stars, because this is really going to help the growth of the show. But more importantly, please share this episode with a girlfriend. This week is launch week, so if you haven't listened to the other episode with Lauren Alexander talking about discipleship, then I would highly recommend that you do that. On Friday, we have another episode coming out, and it is with Becca Treharn, and we're going to be talking all about Sabbath and her life in Jerusalem and how that has really changed her view on Sabbath, how valuable it is. It's a really great conversation. I can't wait for you to hear it. In the meantime, have a great week, everybody. Remember that you are a kingdom builder. Your voice and your actions do matter. And in the words of the prophet Isaiah, we proclaim,
Here I am, Lord. Send me. Have a great week, everyone.